session number 16711, Fred Welsh, reel 19.
Mr. Welsh, reel 19. You arrived in England, Mr. Welsh, and you had this quite remarkable reception. What else happened?
Wonderful reception, and it was announced that if we would work all night to be debriefed, examined, and form filled in, if we were prepared to work all night, we could be on an 8 o'clock train the next morning.
Had you been given the opportunity to send any telegram or something home?
Not yet. And we were put in trucks and we went to a great big country house. And we had to go through the showers, we had to be deloused, mind you. We're always getting deloused. And they put powder down here and you went and had a good bath, a good shower. Out of the shower, and medically examined. And if you're okay, you're sent to the next place, which was a brand new uniform. You put all your uniform on except your tunic, which you took into the main hall of this house. And it was full of women's voluntary service ladies. And you took your tunic to them, and they sewed on, had your stripes, sergeants, lance corporals, good conducts, your medals. You had to we were allowed now to put on our tine tees, red and black mark, and they sewed all these on for you. And then you were shown into a room where there was a cot, and on the cot, the bed, there was a telegram to send home. It only said you're on, the telegram said, in England, home soon. There was a form, a census form, because it was voting time, Nadal. There was medical forms to fill in, and there was about six of these forms to fill in. And you took them to the various places that wanted them, and this went on all night. And I got finished about 4 in the morning. And I'm not saying I was a good singer, but I could get through a song, and if I was depressed, I always seemed to find a song I could sing. And I laid on this bed and I sang a song to myself. And two lads walked past and said, "Are you the person that sang those songs on the march?" I says, "Where at?" And I'd sang a few songs. Everybody had their own songs. And I'm not saying I was a good singer, but I could get through a song. And they said, "Well, we enjoy that," and throw us a packet of cigarettes each, you know. And little things like that made you think, well, you hadn't done so bad. And half past six, we trucked again, and we were taken down to the railway station, which was completely clear. There was no civilians allowed at all. And this plane was stood with on its ad on the front, POW Special. And it was going to as far as Aberdeen. And we got on this train, it was full train. And had set off. And every station you came to, there was always maybe 5 or 6 getting off, or 10. And immediately they got off. Railways in those days were always patrolled by the Royal MPs, Royal Military Police, and they were still there. And they ushered these prisoners of war with all their kit to a certain exit, then you're nearly guaranteed there would be a fleet of free taxis to take them home. Even Rolls Royces turned out for them, and of course the railway could phone ahead from Leicester to the next station, because we went to Leicester, that's one place I do remember. And then we went back and we went to Doncaster, we stopped at North Allerton, and I decided to get off at Darlington. They said, you needn't get off, this train will stop anywhere you like. You could stop at Ferry Hill. I said, no, I said, I'll get the bus from here, I've had enough of the train. And Ginger and me got off here.
And that's Ginger who?
Tom Porter. Ginger, I always call it. And you see, by now, your families were sat at railway stations waiting of every train that came in. And I couldn't get out for his family, and nobody could get out for prisoner of war families, great and the sons. And they showed me their way at the bus station, Feetham's at Darlington, and there was a queue for about three busloads, queue long. And I walked up there and I asked where was the bus to Ferry Hill. And this was how you were treated that time. Somebody says, oh, you'll have to be on the back of the queue, eh? This is the Ferry Hill queue. And I was stood, and a policeman came down. He says, are you on leave? I says, yes. I said, but, I said, I'm just from the out the prison campus. I've never been home 4 years. Right, he says, come with me. And when the bus come in, I was first on the bus. And the policeman said to the driver, no fare, mind. Right. And all my brothers and in-laws were down Ferry Hill Station waiting for me to come home. And they'd been there since I sent the telegram the night before. And we lived at a different place now. We lived up Ferry Hill Village now, not Ferry Hill Station. And I had to find my own way home because the family had moved while I was away. And came into the top of the street, and my father was leaning on the gate looking for me, and I just walked down home and was held by my mother for about an hour. She was absolutely the only time I saw her demonstrate anything like that, and it hurt me, if I felt it. And I got leave then. You got sick leave.
How long was it you got?
Oh, I was off a long, long time. I used to go to Setchfield Army Camp for ration cards and pay and stuff like that. And in the end, I had to ask, had they forgot about me? And I went, got called up, went to a place called Otley Neil Aids.
Before we get to there, you obviously had this wonderful homecoming. What kind of activities did you get up to during your leave?
Oh, the first part, everybody I knew gave you a welcome home party.
Was the bunting out and flags out, this kind of thing?
It wasn't out for me. Mother wouldn't put them out, no. But I couldn't walk down the street unless you met someone or wanted to shake hands. You get a hug. But, I spent days at welcome home parties, though. The family, my mother, the brothers, friends that I knew, all over, was all welcome, went on and on for weeks. And of course, there was only me left then. All the other, my friends were still in the forces. And I used to go to Darlington, to Tom Porter's, and we used to stop in Darlington.
Did it take a while for you to settle down to normal home life after going through what you've been through?
No, I took a long time.
What kind of problems did it give you?
Well, first I went and got called up back to Otley. to go to medical there, you had to write your name and address, you had to print your name and address, you had to had 2 and 2, 3 and 3, really good efforts to say you weren't mentally affected. And then you had physical tests, you had to walk a mile in so long, you had to run a mile and such like. And I got discharged, medically discharged. I wasn't fit.
What date was this?
The date of actual discharge was the 21st of May 1945.
What was wrong with you to cause this medical discharge?
I was supposed to have bronchitis, failing to fulfill army standards, and discharged.
There was no pension attached to this, was there?
Later on, I got a pension of 1 shilling and 6 pence a week, which today's money is
7.5 pence.
And
so you wouldn't be at Otley very long.
Pardon?
You wouldn't be at Otley very long.
Oh no, I wasn't there very long. I got examined at 1 o'clock in Otley. I was sent for 12:30, and I was on the train at 2 o'clock, discharged. And I wanted to stay in the army, but I got this pension, and now I was looking to work. I'd had a long time off leave, long time on leave. So I went back down to the colliery, and this medical thing for me, 7.5 pence, said I wasn't fit to work at the colliery, because by now the Labour Party was in, and there was a lot of changes coming where workmen were now allowed to pay superannuation. The district councils brought it in, the railways brought it in, and the collieries brought it in. So you had to pass a medical. So in real fact, I wasn't fit to sweep the streets because I couldn't pass the medical to get the job to sweep the streets. And I really turned bitter against the nation. In fact, I had an occasion to go for an interview, and again, I didn't get the job. And I really lost my temper and told these people that I'd been treated better in the prison camp than I was being treated by the British. This was about Thursday. And on the Sunday afternoon, up rode the MPs in a jeep and whipped me back into the army to Sitchfield for these derogatory statements that I'd made. And I was taken to see an adjutant, and I explained the predicament to him. She says, "You're kidding?" And yes, says, "No." I says, "I can't get a job anywhere." But he says, "You're down here for a government job as a storeman." Well, I says, "I didn't know that." "Oh," he says, "it's on my sheets." This was at Sitchfield Army Camp. Now, he says, "On Tuesday," he says, "I'm coming for you, and I'll take you through to Aycliffe," which was an ordnance factory then. And we went to see the unemployment officer. And he said, "The next storm's job that comes, Lance Corporal Welsh is given that job. And he says, if he doesn't get it," he says, "he'll get your job, because," he says, "I'll say that you get finished." He says, "he's been terrible." Anyway, there's no job arrived because they started closing the ordnance factory down. So I finished up on the worst job you could ever had at the pits, and it was on the belts that was picking stones off coal as it went past. And by now I was married, and that was the only time my wife and I nearly broke the marriage up. And it finished up, I had a real fight with the manager of the colliery and told him to stuff his job. And I came out and I went to Darlington again to see Ginger Porter, who was a tradesman in the building trade, and they got me a job as a labourer, and that's what I did. I went labouring. No super iron, no nothing. And that's when I went.
So when you went to, when you were taken to Sedgefield, were you still under the jurisdiction of the army?
No, this was because I'd made these remarks. I was now discharged. But then, you say you were discharged, but a lot of people forget, when you join the army, you join the army at the Queen's pleasure. And you're finished when she says you're finished, not when you get discharged. And if you've been in, they can recall you straight away. And I'm near the end of my story, and I'll finish with two things that have nothing to do with the war, but I would like them stated publicly. And when I came home from the prison of war camp, we were all disgusted that we weren't allowed a victory medal. All I got was the African Star, which I never got, because we decided if we couldn't have the Victory Star, we wouldn't have it. Because what we did, the people I was with, what we did in the prisoner of war camp was as good as of a lot of people I see on parade now with a medal, a chest full of medals. And I'll never forgive the War Department for not allowing prisoners of war a victory medal. That's all we wanted. We didn't want anything else, just to say that we had helped in the victory. Because as I say, I was with these Germans and Italians, and I didn't have any defence whatsoever. I didn't have a gun, I didn't have a rifle or anything. We were completely on our own, and we really, really caused these people a lot of problems. And in fact, there's a big book out now, and it has made a film, The Great Escape and the Wrath. There's 150 guys escaped, and that was they said they didn't escape to do anything but just to cause mayhem, which we caused many, many times, and I'll never forget that. And I'll finish with another one, and this is against the Labour Party. They did away with the Durham Light Infantry. And Field Marshal Montgomery and General Horrocks always said, if there was a trouble, send in the Durham Light Infantry, and they'll do the job for me. They're famous for, I was sacrificed. We didn't run away in the desert. We were told to stop there. There was the Marath line. There was many, many places. The 50th Div was one of the first divisions back on the continent when the war came. And the DLI should have had a prefix, the Royal Durham Light Infantry. But no, they decided we were nothing, they would do away with us.
Did you get your civilian outfit when you were discharged?
Yes, we got a good suit and a raincoat, a pair of shoes and a hat.
You met many people during the war, of course. The most outstanding characters that you met that stand out in your memory?
Well, there were many of them. people who would could swear at the Germans in the hardest of conditions, known full well this could be the end of their life. Tiger Flowers was a one. He was captured in France, but there's nobody could get him downhearted. He always had a joke, he could always laugh. Chalky White was another one, a lad from London. Marvellous people to know. And Ray Hutchison from Hull, he was a medic in the GAMS camp, Marburg, and he once, with just aspirin and such as that, fought an epidemic of the flu single-handed as a corporal out of the medical corps. And he used to isolate anybody that had a cough. He got permission to use a storeroom and you had to stay there. And he kept away disease and really worked hard. And he was nearly as clever as a doctor. He was a nurse or a worked in a hospital at Hull. That's one person I don't remember.
Is there any men you came across who let the outfit down?
Well, there was only one who didn't fit in, and he was a person who was very dirty, wouldn't wash his clothes, wouldn't get a bath. And you must do this because you were never healthy enough to fight off diseases, and the main one was lice. And if one person got lice, the whole foot got lice. And he was caught one day with them, and he was sentenced to do all our washing on Christmas Day, you know. And we really forced him to get himself cleaned up. And another character, Lofty Holmes, used to tell stories of Petticoat Lane, many, many stories. What he did to the public was nobody's business. I better not tell anybody, because they might chase him. But he was, and he'd never worked in his life. He'd just fiddled as a, in London, in Petticoat Lane and the markets, selling anything he could get his hand on. Blackberry bushes for rose trees and things like that. He had hands like a lady. He said, I kind of work here. But, and he wouldn't do much in the camp, never got dirty. He could do a day's work and not move. You know, very clever.
Any outstanding officers that you served with?
Well, I always admired Major Jackson, the company commander of D Company before I lost his arm. Very fair person, very strict, looked after his men, saw that anything was going, you got your share, tried to get you the best billets when you were on the move, and had a good company. Looked after me after the war once or twice, did things for me as a solicitor, and met him once or twice and always found him a good man.
Is there any officers that are in your memory that weren't too good?
Well, I don't think I was a person who accepted army discipline. I always used to say, if a sergeant or a sergeant major or even an officer was shouting, he wasn't shouting at me personally. And that's the way I looked at it. I used to look over the heads and let them shout. Never affected me then. After a while, it took you a while to get used to this, but they never really, I was never upset with officers.
Battle's the most terrifying experience. What element kept you going through it, through the danger and the what was happening around you?
Well, support of each other. Support of each other. As I say, the morning I was captured, I was fast asleep when this bombardment started. and it really frightened the whole of life out of me, and I could not get up of where I was lying. Couldn't get up to this trench to defend myself. And as I say again, support, Tom Porter kicked us and said, get up and shoot at something or somebody. And I did do that and got calmed down a little bit. But it was really a terrifying experience for about half an hour, this complete terror. It was in me, terror. And I was supposed to be a leader, a Lance Corporal. But the terror was there.
Was that your worst moment?
That was my worst moment, yes. And another time I got this, but not so bad, was in the prison camp in Italy. And 3D quarters on a bombing mission coming home from low over our camp. And the noise, and you'd never experienced this for weeks and weeks. And everybody shot up out of the beds and wondered what it was about in the middle of the night, you know, daylight, just breaking daylight, and you wonder what on earth it was. And you see the red, the RAF emblems, and you settle down.
What was your opinion of the German soldier?
Well, I found when you were with fighting against Rommel's Africa Corps, a man was a man, near a man. Treat you like a man when you were captured, while they had you for the 2 days before they passed you on. If they could help you get food, they did. If you could, if they had a cigarette and you hadn't, you would share it. They would give you a drink. And I found them quite fair, until you got to the second line of defence, and you were handed over to a second-class soldier. I said it was at the bar. And they were tough guys, because they had you, and very nasty people. The same as the Italians. I don't think if I live till I'm 100, I'll find a good word for the Italians. Very poor people. Very, very poor. I've had rows on holidays in places with them.